September 29th, 2023, I almost said, it's not 2023 yet, it's 2022, I just had a couple of matcha tea lattes without any sweetener, then I had my gum, my spry gum, xylitol gum, that's the sweetener that I'm using, and it's just phenomenal what it does for satisfying without spiking the blood sugar, and it for what it does for oral dental health, it's phenomenal. So before that, I was working, but I've got a couple of news items. We got Proverbs 29 on the docket. I've got a couple of news items. The last day, that was yesterday, right? Yeah, yesterday. I'm just thinking, what day was that? Really, the right day? Wednesday was the day. I got my the annuity. It was finalized. So I'm going to, instead of getting $524 before tax, I'm going to get $523 and some number of pennies as well. So almost the same amount, but slightly less because the total amount was, there was $100 deducted from my bank account that they took it from. And, you know, they could have taken it from somewhere else if they'd got my permission maybe, but they transferred a smaller total for some reason that is obscure to me. But anyway, it's not going to be, I mean, I guess a few pennies every month. If I live for a very long time, it could add up to something, but otherwise it's not going to make a lot of difference. So so I'm pretty thrilled about that. The annuity is now going to be coming in starting November. Another, and after tax, it's about $400. So it's roughly, I think it's maybe a little more than $400 after tax, something like that. So that's another $400 every month, which is a lot of money. That means I could buy a new iPad every month if I had to, right? I mean, that's a lot of money, $400 a month in addition. And so it's great news, and I haven't taken my old age pension yet. Assuming that the government doesn't run out of money and we still get to do that, if I wait 5 years, I can get more, 36% more per month. So I'm trying to wait. So I'm only just almost, it's coming up, it's not even close to a year yet, but next January that is, it'll be a year since I turned 65. So if I can wait 4 more years after that, I'll get 36% more than the amount that's being given to the 65-year-olds. So it might be worth waiting, but it's definitely worth waiting as long as I don't need the money. But I can take it at any time. At any time, if I need the money, I can cash in or, you know, apply for this old age pension. We call it old age security in Canada, which is OAS. Not I didn't make that up. That's what the government calls it. OAS. OAS, old age security. And it was about 600 and something a month recently. So that's quite a bit. But that's before tax. And I can't, I don't understand. I can't see why they, for the life of me, why they tax an old age pension when it's just, I mean, come on. You know, if you're going to give a pension, why do you have to tax it? It doesn't make any sense to me, but anyway, they do that. So that's before tax. So that means if I lose 20% of that, what's my tax bracket? About 20? Is it 20%? I said, what is the tax? What's the tax bracket? I think it's 20. 20 is the standard, somewhere around 20. Anyway, it's roughly 20% tax bracket, which is 1/5. Yeah, so 1/5 taken away from 520, for example, takes away about 100 and something. So you still end up with 400 and something, where if you take away 1/5 of 600 and, well, it's quite a bit more than 600, but if it were 600, a fifth of 600 would be 120, so take away 120, you'd get about 500 a month. So it's still after tax, because it's more than 600. So it's about 500 a month plus something after tax for the old age security. So together with this new annuity would be a total of about 900 and something, 900 and something after tax. The old age security in 5 years' time, 36% is more than a third, but say one third. One third in addition to 600 would be 800, right? But there's inflation too. Every, you know, so many percent every year it goes up. What is one third of 660? 220. See, it's 880. So it's getting up. It rises. It slowly. It's going up. It's going to approach 1,000 before tax. But after tax, it's only going to be, that would only be, in that case, it would be 800. But let's say 700 after tax. Might be 700 after tax by the time comes. If I wait 5 years. So 700 after tax plus 400 after tax is 1,100. 1,100 after tax for the old age security plus this current annuity. Right. And then I've got another annuity that's almost after tax already. And it pays me that one. I've got two of them, actually, because they were not taken from funds that hadn't been taxed yet. So I've already paid tax on those, so it's just the interest that I'm paying tax on for those annuities. I mean, there's one annuity plus the new one. I had $340 annuity roughly, and then a $620. 340 and 620 is 960. I have 960, yeah. I have a $960 annuity that's almost tax free. But I need it. Like, that's essential to getting me. I mean, well, right now, I'm spending all my money every month, so it's. And so this new annuity might be able to get me beyond where, so that I can save a little money, you know. If I took my old age security, I could probably save a lot more money because I'd have, you know, that much more per month, right? But, you know, another 800 a month maybe after tax, what would it be? Or seven, maybe 900 a month after tax. Let's see. No, I said 400 a month plus 700. 1,100 after tax, yeah. It's 1,100 after tax for that. For the new annuity plus the old age security, if I wait for it. But just the new annuity is what did I say it was? 500 a month. See, yeah, it's enough to get me through a few rough spots, you know. Like, if I have some equipment that I need to replace, like if I need a new washer or dryer or a fridge or, you know, whatever I need. If I have to buy something new, or pay for some work to be done, I've got the money. I'd rather do all my own work, so I'm not planning to hire people to do work for me. But if I can, I want to do my own work. Okay, so that brings us to the second part of the news. I mean, I'm excited about the money. It's not. But what I used to think about money is totally different from how I think now. I used to think, well, money is like, you know, if I only had money, then I could do everything and I wouldn't have to, you know, it just doesn't work that way. I mean, when you get money, like, if, you know, I used to always think if I could only get rich, if I could only be rich, then I could do all the things I want, right? And it doesn't work that way. Because if you get rich, then you buy too many things. Then you have too many things and you can't do the things you want because you're too busy doing things with the things you bought. And it's like, you know, there's no way to do anything when you're rich. It's just wrong. You're wrong if you think it makes you, you know, in some way able to accomplish your dreams. It doesn't do that. So now I realize it's better to have just the right amount of money to barely be able to pay for everything every month so that you have to shop really hard and buy the best products you can to do what you need to do so that you can just barely get by every month. Then you have to work hard every month to make sure you buy the best products, and that makes sure your quality of life is really good and your equipment's not always breaking down and you're not wasting time. It's there's a lot to be said for having the right amount of money, not too much, not too little. So, I mean, I think Jehovah knows. I know Jehovah knows better than us, but oh yeah, that's a whole other topic. I was going to talk about that too. It's like when I'm speaking to my little children and to my family. But the thing is, when I make a video, it's and I publish it, it's public, so anyone can watch it. But I don't really want to get into the topic about, you know, talking to unbelievers, because that's just not worth talking about, because it doesn't, it's not productive, and they just see it as a contest of some kind, so I can't really talk to those people. I mean, you know, we want the best for everybody. Like, believers want the best for everybody. We don't want it, we don't want to, like, an unbeliever wants to convince a believer not to believe, you know? And I don't think, I'm not sure if that's really what believers are trying to do, okay? I don't think that that's what we believers are trying to do to the unbelievers. We're just trying to share what we know and what we believe, you know, and with everybody. And but especially to other believers. That's the thing. You can't share as much with an unbeliever because they don't have the capacity to understand it. And so it's not a competition where we're going to debate with them or fight against them. So we're not seeking to, you know, I mean, we're overturning strongly entrenched things, Paul writes, you know. That's right. We can our faith can overturn strongly entrenched things. That's true. But, excuse me. I was out working today. So I'm going to talk about that. But, no, I want to talk about some other much more important things. No, I mean, the thing is, every time I hear, you can easily tell within the, I mean, usually, or very often anyway, not always, it's very often true that you can tell within a few minutes of hearing an unbeliever talk, you can tell that they don't believe very, very soon into the conversation, often, not always, but often, because of the way they don't invoke, you know, Jehovah or Jesus, or they don't talk about God, or they don't. But the thing is, count your blessings. You know, they don't count their blessings. They talk about some other thing that doesn't have any power. You know, as though everything they have came about by chance. That's how they talk. Whereas a believer will talk about blessings that come from a person who's the source of all blessings, you know, a real person, Jehovah. So there's a big difference in the way unbelievers talk as compared to believers. Let's talk about this. I was out today, but let's talk about this idea that I've used this quote before, and I forgot or didn't know that it was Pablo Picasso who said it, apparently, because I found it today when I Googled it. He said, good artists copy, great artists steal. And some people have commented, or at least, I mean, one comment that's made there is that Picasso got his ideas from African sculpture, like, or some of his ideas anyway, or a lot of them maybe, but whatever. At least some of them he got from African sculpture. So the idea of, I think this is a phenomenal statement, but then I realized just today when I'm listening to all this great music, I've been listening to all the great music that's been performed by some very great guitarists like Tommy Emmanuel, Richard Smith, okay, I can read the names, Joshua Stefan, even Mike Dawes and Martin Taylor, well, there's some amazing guys. Well, Eric Clapton was in this sequence too, and Joe Bonamassa, Josh Smith, Mark Knopfler, Chet Atkins. I mean, a lot of these songs. But there's some amazing jam sessions too. With one of them was with Stewie French, and what's his name? Michael Fix. Michael Fix, Stewie French, Richard Smith, and Tommy Emmanuel had a jam session that's unbelievable on YouTube. It's really, really, really good. But I don't like that music as much as I like blues, okay? They have some blues influence in the music they played. There is some blues influence. But I really have my heart in blues, and I want to talk about that. And, I mean, I want to talk about the reason why, too. Because when I hear blues, when I listen to blues, it just does something to me in a way where if I listen to really good blues and if I hear enough of it, then, I mean, not all the same. Like, I mean, blues has so many, like you can have 12-bar blues or you can have many other forms of blues. But even within 12-bar blues, you could structure it, arrange it very differently, even within the 12-bar blues. That's, even if you kept the same chord structure exactly, you could still have, different ways of phrasing and arranging or chording, and you could have places where the chord goes stop and then it keeps on with the sequence of the 12-bar blues in terms of the metric keeps going, the count keeps going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4 for 12 bars. But there can be stops, and then there can be different bass lines. It doesn't have to be the same exact bass. It has to follow the same chord structure of the 12-bar blues in order to be 12-bar blues, but it doesn't have to do the same thing. So there are many ways of arranging 12-bar blues, even just, and then you can deviate from 12-bar blues and go into some other chord structure entirely as well. So when I hear really good blues, it doesn't matter if it's 12-bar, but if it's something related to 12-bar blues or not, doesn't even matter. I think the one that really gets me is the 12-bar blues, though, because it's the most traditional and the most common. And, no, the big thing about 12-bar blues is it's the one for which that statement, great artists steal, applies the most, to the greatest degree. Because in 12-bar blues, everybody plays the same chord structure. I mean, they do in any blues, of course. They have to follow the same chord structure as everyone else that's playing the same song. But in 12-bar blues, it's the version of blues that everybody knows. It's the one that is the common one. So if you had to play with a musician whom you did not know before, you could always play 12-bar blues together, and you could be, you could have it would be very easy. It's the easiest form of blues to play with somebody else with whom you've never played, because everybody knows 12-bar blues is the standard form of blues. So that's the form of blues that you really want to learn if you want to be able to play blues with anybody. And then you can learn the variations later on, which is what I did. But I never really even learned 12-bar blues very... I didn't learn it all that well. But what I did learn, I really learned it. It really got into my soul, into my body, into my mind and soul and body. It really embedded itself in me quite deeply. And, it's hard to put it into words. It really became part of me, but I'm not at all thinking that 12-bar blues is like, from day to day I will probably prefer another form of blues that's not 12-bar blues, or there's country music that uses has more blues influence in it too. There's that music. So from day to day, I might prefer some other chord structure than the 12-bar structure, but which is a standard structure. I don't need to. Everyone knows it. You can easily look it up, find out what it is. I don't need to enumerate what it is, but or detail what it is. But it's the standard blues that everybody uses, and it's when it's hard to describe when I'm listening to music. Okay. Yeah, when I listen to enough music, now I'm talking about bombarding my ears with music, like 24 hours almost, or every waking hour, every waking hour, if I listen to music, And if it's really the best music, like these really good guitarists, and I keep listening, eventually what happens is it crystallizes. Something happens, and I start to say, oh, I have not written that type of song before. Or I think, well, I, you know, because I know 12 bar blues, and I know a few variations other than 12 bar blues, when I hear this enough, I suddenly realize, well, wait a minute. Okay, I could write a song. If I listen, I have to hear enough. I have to keep listening long enough. And then I suddenly get to the point where it first of all, the joy that they're expressing in their music enters into me. And I want to then make music. That's the first thing. But then, but I might want to make music, but I need to get an idea. So if I listen long enough, I'll get an idea and say, well, wait a minute, that's a good idea. So it's like, and you can steal from blues, because blues is, like, if you think about, okay, when blues musicians play together, they often copy each other. That's standard. And when they're playing their solos, they copy what the other player played at the beginning of their solo, and then they play their variation on that melody, right? So the copying part is deeply embedded into blues, this idea of copying. So the idea of stealing, great artists steal, is a really good analogy for blues. It's an excellent analogy for blues, more than any other form of music. And I think it's more true of 12-bar blues, too. It's more true of 12-bar blues, because that's where this copying enters in, because 12-bar blues is the style of blues that's played, the form of blues that's played by more musicians than any other style. It's the common ground between musicians more than any other style. So I'm not saying that there couldn't be another style that's common ground, but it's 12-bar blues is the standard common ground. So it's the one. So if you take 12-bar blues, and you take this idea of the fact that it's often played by musicians who don't know each other. They've never played together. So it's logical they would copy each other, because they want to make the other musician feel at home by copying what he plays. They also want to learn what he's doing, so they copy so they can learn what he's doing. It's getting acquainted with the other player. They copy each other. And so the idea of great artists steal, it enters into 12-bar blues more than any other form of music, so that I know of. So this idea, I think it's been used by more than, I mean, Pablo Picasso might have been the first one who said it, or maybe he wasn't the first one. There may have been someone else, but other people have repeated it after him, certainly. Other people have repeated that statement that he made. Now I have a pain in this tooth. When I worked hard today, this tooth started hurting. So I found out that's why I couldn't work hard in the past, is because it makes my this nerve section, this part of my face, these nerves, they start to act up. They start to hurt when I work hard. So I did hard work today, and then this started to hurt. Then I had my meal of food, so it was hurting before I had my meal. But, you know, it's the kind of thing that you would say, well, I shouldn't work so hard, because, you know, so it's not the best for, if you want to work, to have this kind of pain that's caused by working. But hopefully it'll calm down over time, because I wasn't chewing on it today. I had some matcha tea latte in the morning. I didn't chew on it this morning. So it wasn't caused by chewing, unless I had some gum maybe this morning. But no, I don't believe it. It was not hurting after I chewed. It was nothing. It wasn't caused by chewing, is my belief. It's caused by the working. Working gets the nervous system, you know, it makes everything. The blood pumps harder. And by the way, vitamin C is everywhere the blood is. I mean, vitamin C stimulates the immune system, and the antibodies are in the blood. So everywhere there's blood, there's vitamin C effect. The effect of vitamin C is felt everywhere there's blood. So if you have inflammation in your body, it doesn't matter where it is, in the gums of your teeth or anywhere in your body, the antibodies are going to get in there because the blood is there. If there's blood, there's antibodies. And if there's antibodies, then vitamin C is going to boost those antibodies. So it's wrong to think that vitamin C cannot affect the gums of the teeth. That's wrong. It can affect every part of the body in which there's blood. Blood flows through the body. The circulatory system doesn't have any separate compartments. It's all united. So the antibodies are going to be there. So all infections are cured by vitamin C, so all you need to do is take enough of it. You know, I mean, it's much more than what conventional medicine tells us is usable by the body. The body can use a lot more vitamin C when you have an infection, so you can take 2 grams every 20 minutes, or even more than that if you're not a young, very young person. A very young person shouldn't take more than that, and some young children should take less than that based on their weight. But I mean, if you can't take it every 20 minutes, you take it every 30 minutes. Or if you can't take 2 grams, you take 1 gram. Or if you can't take a gram, you take half a gram. You know, that's 500 milligrams. Every whatever, as often as you can take it. But the point is, you don't stop taking it till the infection's gone. That's the point. You keep taking it at the same regular cycle, whatever it is, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. Even if I took 2 grams every 2 hours, I don't think that's fast enough. But for a lot of infections, you have to take it faster than that, possibly, because the infection is going to be working also. But that might kill some infections. But 2 grams every 20 minutes will kill a lot of infections. I mean, every kind of infection you can imagine, except for maybe cancer, can be killed with that amount of vitamin C. Otherwise, you need more with cancer. But so this is not known by the medical community, so it's no good to quote what the conventional people say, and that's what they do. They quote, people will just repeat back what they've heard, even though it's not the truth. So you can't listen to people who are possibly quoting what conventional wisdom is or conventional medicine, because it's wrong. If you want the truth, you can't listen to those people. So I just wanted to mention that. But the other thing is, you know, and we don't have an obligation to tell them they're wrong either, or to prove they're wrong. That's all we need to do is take vitamin C and cure our infection. That's all. And then we can share the success we have with them. But if we want to, you know, I mean, if we feel that they're worthy of us telling them. Otherwise, you know, we can just cure our own infections. So what was I going to say? I had a great day today of working. I worked from 3:30 roughly. I didn't get started till late because I was listening to this great music again. And time passes like so fast. I was, you know, so fast. Like an hour passed and I was listening to music and it was 3:30 all of a sudden. And I've been listening since about 12 or something. I just keep listening to it. But I mean, I'm going through this. It's like a mix, you know, the YouTube mix where they go through one song, one group after another, I mean, one video after another with different artists and so on. And some of the same artists. There's a lot of Tommy Emmanuel, but there's other artists. It's so great. Anyway, but I was listening to all these things and I got sidetracked until 3:30. I finished at about 7, so it's about 3.5 hours, I think, I spent working on my car, on my two cars. I had to switch them over. That was a lot of work, though. It was hard work. And I made a couple of mistakes because I brought the tarp I was using on my summer car into the house. And then I realized afterward I wanted to bring it back out again and put it on the winter car. I mean, the car I was winterizing, to cover it up with the best tarp I have. So it's the best tarp I've got for waterproof. It's also very big, though. So I didn't think I was going to use it on the small car because it's so big. But in the end, I decided I got to use it because it's the best protection I've got. Plus, I think this spring when I unwrapped my small car, it's never been driven in the winter, I noticed it was a bit wet, or the canvas got a bit wet underneath the plastic waterproof layer. So I thought I needed a new tarp at that point. So then I got the new tarp. But when I got the new tarp, I put it on my summer car, the one I was putting, it's my winter car, I mean, that I was putting away for the summer. I wrapped it with the new tarp just to keep it completely dry. And by the way, no mice or rodents of any kind have gotten into the car that I summerized or put away for the summer. The car, my winter car was perfect, and it didn't start immediately when I turned the key, which could be that the gas is getting old. It might have a bit of water in the gas. I think the battery was good, though. I think. Was it? Wait a minute. No, because I went... No, that's right. The battery wasn't good. And the reason why, the problem was I made a mistake because I forgot to bring the voltmeter from the power port of the Accord, the small car. I had it there in the summer. Forgot to pull that. I should buy another one of those so I don't have to keep moving it. But I moved it over to the van, and when I was going to get it and move it, I had the battery hooked up for the van, and the battery, I believe, drains through a parasitic drain. I lose battery power if I don't. So I should have disconnected the battery immediately when I realized I had to go and get this thing from the other car and then plug it in. So I wanted to know what the voltage was when I started the van so that I'd know if it didn't start, whether it was the battery or some other reason. So I went and got the voltmeter from the power port, plugged it into the van, and it said 12.4 or something. It was only 12.4 volts. That's not enough to start a car. Not easily if it's been sitting around for months. If you have 13 volts, you can start very easily a car. Start a car very easily if it's got, or, you know, 12 point, you need 12.7. Not, you don't want it to be, have fallen to 12.4. So, I mean, it's just not full power. And it makes a difference. Like, it might stumble a little if you're trying to start a car with a battery that's not quite topped up. It's harder to start it. But especially if the car's been sitting around. So, because it just, everything is not quite, you know, ready. It's not, you don't know what condition the fuel lines are in or anything. I mean, there's some issues, right? You need to have, you know, excellent spark. The biggest thing that I've noticed to do with cars is the battery, as far as how well it runs, like, or how well it starts. It's by far the biggest thing is the battery. So that's why I'm thinking it was the battery was the reason why it didn't start immediately. I mean, I think I didn't keep cranking it the first time. I sort of went, it stuttered a little, and I thought it might start, so I eased off. I turned off the key for a sec, and then I tried again, and the second time it easily started. But I never have to turn the key twice normally. So, I mean, it starts first crank. So I'm not, but the gas is also going to get old, and I'll have to add octane booster, I think. If I keep the tanks topped up really to the top, I think that, and if it's airtight in there, then I don't think the gas can deteriorate if there's no air in there. So I think that helps. If you keep the gas topped up, you can't get old gas if you keep it topped up. But I'll need to add octane booster. That's what I think. Once I started it once, the next time I started it, when I had to put it in the garage or under the carport, it started perfect. The next time I started it, it started first click, like just barely turned the key and it started. So there's nothing wrong with the gas based on that. And it was the same, that was the Accord, right, that I started up? No, that was not the Accord. But I also started the Accord to put it into its place for the winter under the other carport. And I started it after I added the gas stabilizer and what else did I add to it? Oh, yeah, the gas line antifreeze. In case it has a little water in it, because it does sit all winter, so... But I keep it topped up, so I don't think it's not much water, I don't believe, but there could be, right? So the first time I try to start it, there might be a little water, a tiny bit, and that would sink to the bottom. Then that would be the first thing you get when you try to start it, if that's where the... Normally that's the outtake, or the intake for the fuel pump, where it takes in the gases from the very bottom of the tank, so that when your tank's empty, you can still get gas, so... it'll take the water, and you won't be able to start your car if there's water in the bottom. But if there's only a tiny bit of water, you might just stumble a bit when you try to start it. So, and then that water will be burnt up or used, or, you know, it'll be turned into steam or something, and it'll be lost on the first time you start the car. You don't want to have much water, but it won't start with any amount of water. So if it starts, then the second time you start it, there shouldn't be any water. So I started that car, though, after I added the gasoline antifreeze this time. So, and it started, I'm trying to think how the car started. The van started with some difficulty. Yeah, I think the car had a bit of difficulty, too. Yeah, it did. Didn't start immediately. I think that means the gas is getting old. So in the spring, maybe I can get some gasoline, not gasoline antifreeze, but I could get some more gasoline antifreeze, but I can get some octane booster in the spring to try to make it easier. I can add a couple of, you know, what would I add? Let's see, let me think. I'm trying to remember if I tightened the gas cap all the way. I think I did. I need to add, I could add maybe more than one octane booster. More than one bottle of it, because the octane can suffer when you get old gas, and I'm still researching it too, whether I might have to dump all the gas out and put in fresh gas, but that seems to me that's probably not the case, but I haven't researched it very much. So I mean, I've been doing this for years and not had any problem with the gas. It's the same gas. I mean, I add maybe a quarter of a tank every year because that's all I use. I'm not driving much. So that's the story of the cars, but it was hard work. I had to take the tarps off the summer, off the van that was stored for the summer, and I had to dry them out on the lawn, stretch them out on the lawn, dry them for a while I was... But the first thing I did, I had to get the battery into the van, so I peeled back the front part of the tarp, or all three layers, however many layers that I had there. Just two layers or three? I'm trying to think. Yeah, I had three layers. Yeah, so I had to peel back the three layers, and so that I could get the hood open, and then I could and get the door up, the driver's door open, so I could put the battery that I keep in the basement into the car, and take the old battery that's dead out of the van. I'm thinking of trying to rejuvenate that old battery too, because I saw what Uncle Tony's garage did, with his welding machine to rejuvenate a lead acid battery, and I have a very old battery, or older than these two that I've got for my two vehicles, that I can try to rejuvenate maybe. So I've been thinking about trying that. I might try that, to try and rejuvenate that old battery, because it still has some juice in it. It can still crank 500 or 600 amps, cold cranking amps. It's still got some juice. It just doesn't have the same. Its internal resistance has gone up because of the sulfation, I believe. So if I wait too long, I won't be able to ever recover it. But if I try something, because that battery, I don't use it anymore. So as soon as I don't use it anymore, I mean, I've been using it occasionally up till now for starting a car when I didn't want to use my good batteries, but, and you know, just to move a car out so I could cut the lawn or something. But now that I'm not using it anymore, or at some point, I should try to rejuvenate, see if I can recover that battery by using the high current from the welder, you know, which is what Tony was testing. He was doing that, and he said it works. I mean, that's the thing. I haven't been ready to do it, because for one thing, I don't want to. It's not fear of success, but what it is if I try it too soon, right, and it works, I'm not going to learn anything. Like, I might forget that it worked. Like, I might rejuvenate the battery, right? It might work. But if I don't meditate on it before I try it for long enough, I won't really maintain or retain, I should say, that knowledge that I gain from it. So I have to convince myself that it's an experiment I really, really want to try. And then when I get to that stage, I can, when I'm willing to learn, when I'm willing to believe the results, then I should do the experiment. That's when I should do the experiment, because then I'll learn. And if I'm not willing to believe the results, I can't do the experiment. It's the same with nutrition. If you want to try calcium as a supplement, or you want to try taking vitamin K2, but you're not ready because you don't think that you would believe the results, you're not ready to be learning, you know, you're not open-minded, you're not ready to accept the result, whatever it is. So, you know, you're not ready to learn. In other words, if you're not ready to learn, you shouldn't do the experiment. So that's how you know with nutrition whether you should do the experiment, is when you're absolutely sure that you should do the experiment, because you're ready to learn what's really going to happen, and you really have thought about it sufficiently, which for some people, they might not have to think about it at all. Other people might have to think about it for years before they try it. And some people will never be able to try it because they're not ready to learn. So I can understand that we're all going to be different. So anyway, I swapped them over, and I'd had to transfer a lot of stuff from one car to the other, like the jack and the wrench for taking the lug nuts off the wheels, and the breaker bar, the cheater bar. What they call it, a cheater bar, that you give, it gives you more leverage on the wrench. What else was I saying? Oh yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, so this thing about great art of steel, we can come back to that. Great art of steel. In blues, everybody steals from each other because we're copying. That's the thing about blues. It's like a common language where there is no copyright in blues. It's not every. That's what I was going to say, too. Yeah, there's no real copyright within a blues song because every riff in blues has been played a million times. Nobody owns any certain, you know, bar or structure within a bar, any melodic structure, nobody owns it in blues. That's the thing. Everybody steals in blues. And you're allowed to steal, and that's why I like it so much, because I can write a song and nobody's going to say copyright infringement, because in blues it's understood that that's what you do, is you steal other people's melodies. Or it's just that it's not stealing because they've already been done so many times. So, I mean, everybody's used that same melody. It's just, and also when you use it, you'll always use it in a new way. You'll do something different in the way you use it. That's what I love about, that's why I love blues so much, is I can listen to jazz and blues all, you know, I can hear all these different variations. But then when I come to actually get inspired and say, I want to make a song now because I've heard all this great music and I'm just burning inside. I want to make a song. And when I get to that point, I can go back to the structure of only within 12 bar blues is there enough structure that you can visualize a song too. It's the only musical structure within which you can visualize almost an entire song without actually working on it. You can, because it's, you know what that structure is already. It's standard. And you know it well enough, you can actually start to visualize the entire song. And then all you need to do is make up what, invent the word, you know, write the words that are going to go in it. And that's all you need to do. So you basically have, if you can get an idea for the chords, or the variation on the rhythm in the chords, or whatever you're going to use in the song that's different from the other standard songs you've heard before. But you get inspired from something. That's the other thing. You take a bit from this song, a bit from that song, and a bit from the other song. So you need to hear a lot of different songs. And then you put all that together and you say, this is what I want to do. Because it's got all the things I love about music generally, or about that kind of music generally, or whatever it is. I mean, you could write it in any style, but I'm just saying it's easier to do it in blues. Much easier to do it in blues. You can do more things with blues by far, without being, it's just, it, and everyone who's, it, I mean, there are going to be more people who are going to understand it, because it's common. Blues is common. It's a common language of musicians. I mean, it's very, very powerful for that reason. And you can also, you can communicate with other artists because you can use some little bit that they used. So you can be communicating to them by taking and using or stealing something they did, but using it in a new way that couldn't possibly be a copyright violation anyway. But in blues, there is no copyright violation. It's not possible. It's not, at least I've never heard of it, certainly. I mean, I guess anything's possible, but it's just not going to happen in blues, because blues is just, it's the common man. It's the music of the common man. So there's no common man, or, you know, who would, I mean, a common man knows. The thing is, in blues, and in many things in life, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, right? Nobody takes offense when somebody copies them. They take it as a compliment. So it doesn't, and in blues, everybody's humble. In blues, everyone who plays blues is humble, I would say. More, I mean, more humble than the musicians who play the other music. They're very humble musicians. They're people who, I mean, the people who played blues were the people in the ghetto. The people who were the humblest people who made blues and made music instead of robbing a bank or instead of, you know, doing break and enter and stuff like that, you know, whatever, instead of doing drugs. Some of them, I guess, may have also done drugs. But I think music was a way for them to avoid a lot of bad things. They channeled their energy into their blues. Blues, and they could express their sorrow and their pain through blues, through the music of blues. So it's a common man's music. I mean, nobody really wants to, oh, I shouldn't say, it, something I said the other day about drugs, I said people only do it because they're in pain. That's not true. Some people use drugs because they think they're so smart that they can find a better way to have their body function using drugs. They're not doing it because of the pain. They're doing it because they think they're so smart that they can improve on what God created, and they can use drugs to do that. They think they're smart. So it's not just people who... It's not just pain. There's other reasons. There are many reasons why people use drugs, okay? So it's not just... There are just an infinite number of different reasons why people use drugs. But to stay away from drugs is not always easy at all. Sometimes it's very difficult when you're in a culture that's using drugs, like in the ghetto. They had a lot of problems and a lot of drug problems as well in the poor parts of the city. But the people who played blues, although they may have had some problems with alcohol or, you know, not just drugs, alcohol and cigarettes and things, many other things, they couldn't be doing a lot of those things while they were playing music. Some people were smoking while they played music. But generally, when you're doing music, it's taking your mind off of these other things, so you can focus on the music and not these other bad things. They're vices, you know, they're bad habits. So music is a powerful way of channeling your energy into something good. At least it can be, anyway. And a lot of these musicians who played blues were very humble people who were really trying hard to not do the bad things, and that's why they chose music, right? So, I mean, that's the idea. So music is a channel, and a lot of the blues musicians were humbler than any other type of musician. So it just, they were just more accepting of their fellow man. That's the idea I'm talking about with humility. They accepted their fellow man. So I got my cars changed over and my car started and everything looks okay. But I mean, I think I'm still, my big problem might be now that the gas is going to be an issue. Sooner or later, I'm going to have old gas in the cars. I don't know whether, because I don't burn up enough gas. So I may want to go to, you start using a very small amount of gas in the tank, possibly. Well, I know what I could do, possibly. Wait a minute. I just thought of something I could do. No, that wouldn't work, would it? Let me think. No, not really. Well, yeah, I could. I don't think you want to store old gas in your tank, but maybe you could store gas. I'm gonna meditate on it. I could always siphon out the gas and put a small amount in the other car for the season in which I'm driving it, and put the gas I siphoned out into the car that I'm storing. Problem is, if you can't run it with the gas that you're putting in it, you have to put it into storage first and then fill the tank with the old gas and then take out the old gas before you drive it again. I'm not sure if that's a good idea. It doesn't sound like a good idea particularly, but it would be a way to keep the tank full without using any of the old gas. Well, you couldn't be sure you'd be able to siphon all of it out. That's the problem too. But you could dilute the old gas with the new gas, you know, significantly. You know, 4 to 1 or something, or new to old, and then add an octane booster. That's what somebody was saying online. So Proverbs 29, little children, a man repeatedly reproved but making his neck hard will suddenly be broken, and that without healing. When the righteous become many, the people rejoice, but when anyone wicked bears rule, the people sigh. A man that is loving wisdom makes his father rejoice, but he that is having companionship with prostitutes destroys valuable things. By justice, a king makes a land keep standing, but a man out for bribes tears it down. An able-bodied man that is flattering his companion is spreading out a mere net for his steps. In the transgression of a bad man there is a snare, but he that is righteous cries out joyfully and is glad. The righteous one is knowing the legal claim of the lowly ones. He that is wicked does not consider such knowledge. Men of boastful talk inflame a town, but those who are wise turn back anger. A wise man, having entered into judgment with a foolish man, he has become excited and has also laughed, and there is no rest. Bloodthirsty men hate anyone blameless, and as for the upright ones, they keep seeking for the soul of each one. All his spirit is what a stupid one lets out, but he that is wise keeps it calm to the last. Where a ruler is paying attention to false speech, all those waiting on him will be wicked. The one of little means and the man of oppressions have met each other, but Jehovah is lighting up the eyes of them both. Where a king is judging the lowly ones in trueness, his throne will be firmly established for all time. The rod and reproof are what give wisdom, but a boy let on the loose will be causing his mother shame. When the wicked become many, transgression abounds, but those who are righteous will look on their very downfall. Chastise your son, and he will bring you rest and give much pleasure to your soul. Where there is no vision, the people go unrestrained, but happy are they that are keeping the law. A servant will not let himself be corrected by mere words, for he understands, but he is paying no heed. Have you beheld a man hasty with his words? There is more hope for someone stupid than for him. If one is pampering one's servant from youth on, in his later life, he will even become a thankless one. A man given to anger stirs up contention, and anyone disposed to rage has many a transgression. The very haughtiness of earthly man will humble him, but he that is humble in spirit will take hold of glory. He that is partner with a thief is hating his own soul. An oath involving a curse he may hear, but he reports nothing. Trembling at men is what lays a snare, but he that is trusting in Jehovah will be protected. Many are those seeking the face of a ruler, but the judgment of a man is from Jehovah. A man of injustice is something detestable to the righteous ones, and one who is upright in his way is something detestable to a wicked one. That was Proverbs chapter 29. I hope you enjoyed that. I know I did. It's like music to my ears when I hear the reading of Proverbs. And see the interplay of all these principles that have been written down for us by faithful men of old, in this case Solomon, in the Proverbs. So I had a fantastic day, a really busy day. I think I'll sign off maybe right now. Yeah, so my annuity is coming through. It's going to be starting November, beginning of the month. So it's September 29th right now, 2022, 2107 hours. Ward Green saying, I'm signing off, and have a great evening. Goodbye for now. Take care. I love you.